Good morning. I hope you're having a fine Sunday morning. Welcome back to another edition of Miami Valley Voices on this Cox radio station. I'm your host from the Dayton Daily News, Ron Rollins, and we are here to mark a special anniversary. The Miami Conservancy District, which is the organization that keeps us from flooding, actually, gets and does a lot of other stuff that matters to our area, is celebrating its centennial this year. And joining us, we have two people who work there. We have Sarah Hippensteel Hall, who's the manager of Watershed Partnerships. How are you doing?
How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm glad you're here. And I love the Conservancy District. I love not being flooded. And we have Kurt Reinhardt, the chief engineer. How are you doing?
Great. How are you?
I'm well. A couple years ago, we had the chief of your agency, Janet Bly, here to talk generally about the organization. But that was quite a while ago, and that was pegged to the Great Dayton Flood of 1913. The Conservancy District took a couple years to form after that. One of you want to sort of remind people a little bit about the organization and how it evolved and how we ended up with it today?
Yeah, basically, as you said, it started out with the 1913 flood, great natural disaster, devastated not only Dayton, but cities all along the river. Mm-hmm. The community's citizens came together and said, we can't have flooding, we can't have our communities in peril like this.
Right.
So they started looking for a way to protect themselves from flooding, hired Arthur Morgan from Tennessee, who came to Dayton, traveled up and down the valley, looked at the area, looked at what happened in 1913, came up with what was considered a pretty radical plan of dams in rural areas to hold back large amounts of water only during flooding, to work with levees and channel improvements and floodplain preservation all along the valley in the cities from Pickwa to Hamilton. Because it was a new idea, obviously it took time to implement.
Sure.
Took them a couple years to actually get legislation passed in the state of Ohio to allow for such a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Once the legislation was passed, then they brought all the everything together and formed Miami Conservancy District in 1915, which is now 100
where
years
we are.
Later.
And now there are five dams, correct?
That
There's
is correct.
Lockington?
Lockington Dam is on Laramie Creek up
Englewood,
in Shelby County.
Yeah. Germantown and Huffman.
Yes.
Oh, yay. All right. So, and they are, some of those are closer into the metropolitan area today because of the way the city has grown out. But at the time, those were really remote, rural.
Right.
Lockington's the one that's furthest north.
Yeah,
right?
Lockington's furthest north.
Okay.
It's on Laramie Creek up in Shelby County.
Okay.
And holds back water up in the upper part of the watershed.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then Englewood, Taylorsville, and Huffman are pretty much now just outside of Dayton, mm-hmm. holding back water on the Stillwater, Great Miami, and Mad Rivers. And then Germantown Dam is southwest of town, holding back water to reduce flooding farther south.
And so you said an interesting thing there too that I hadn't really thought about. The dams are designed to really only work when they're needed, right? Instead of being like the Hoover Dam that holds a giant lake back behind it all the time.
Right. You think of Hoover Dam, big dams, or even local dams, Caesars Creek. Typically, there's a reservoir, a lake mm-hmm. that has multiple purposes, water supply, irrigation, hydropower, whatever. One thing unique about our dams is they normally don't hold water.
Mm-hmm.
They're called dry dams, so their strict purpose is only for flood protection. So most of the time, they're just there, and then when we need it, when we have a lot of water in rivers, the dams hold it back.
So how often do we need it? I've heard it said that the Great Dayton Flood was like a 500-year or 1,000-year flood or something like that, and I think people generally get that it was bigger than usual, but how often do the dams actually, how often are we really happy that that those are there?
Pretty much every year.
Okay, good.
Nothing, thankfully, to the extent of 1913.
Sure.
But looking back before 1913 in our history, Dayton was founded in 1796.
Mm-hmm.
We had a big enough flood in 1805 that they actually considered moving somewhere else.
Wow.
They didn't. They decided to stay here over the next 100 years, or a little over 100 years, till 1913. They had about 10 or 12 more floods where there was water in town,
right.
Damage to property.
Not just on the order of 1913, but
nothing
still
like 1913,
significant.
But
wow.
Still sometimes a couple of feet of water in the streets.
Wow.
So significant enough that it was a real problem.
So they finally fixed it. Now, and maybe this is a question for Sarah. Now, since then, though, the obviously maintaining that system is a big part of what the Conservancy District does. But you've since then kind of become more like general overseers and managers of the river system itself, kind of, right? I mean, talk about how the organization has changed over the years.
So our mission has always been broad, related to water things that communities need help with. And so as communities have requested our help on different water issues, whether it be checking out to make sure our groundwater is still plentiful and healthy, mm-hmm. or dealing with pollution in the rivers, or ensuring that we have places in the river to go to fish and put our boats in, mm-hmm. we have responded to those requests as we are able and helped communities take advantage of this resource in lots of different ways.
Mm-hmm. So as the person that manages those partnerships, what are some of the organizations that you work with on those things?
So all of the communities, all of the cities along the rivers themselves, but then anywhere in the land that drains to the rivers itself. So that's parts of 15 counties. So sometimes mm-hmm. I'm working with county commissioners, sometimes I'm working with local nonprofit groups, sometimes I'm working with individual citizens who have requests. It just mm-hmm. depends on who has water needs. More recently, we have a couple examples of these partnerships. For the last few years, we facilitated a partnership between our wastewater treatment communities who manage wastewater treatment plants, and our upstream agricultural partners, our farmers. Mm-hmm. And so I won't go into all the details, but we facilitated a relationship between those two different communities, and they are working together to improve the river.
And with the idea being kind of the reverse of what we've been reading about up in Toledo and stuff, where you have agricultural runoff going into the lake or into Grand Lake. Our runoff heads into the Gulf of Mexico, right? I mean,
our runoff does head to the Gulf of Mexico. And in fact, of the upper Mississippi rivers, which were considered one of them, we are the second largest contributor of nitrogen to the Gulf of Mexico.
I didn't know that. My goodness.
Now, that being said, the Great Miami River is actually one of the healthiest rivers in the state, and a lot of the miles of the river itself meets or exceeds state standards. It's in pretty good shape, but we're still sending stuff downstream.
Right.
And because the majority of the land in our watershed, all the land that drains to the river, mm-hmm. is being used for agriculture, that mm-hmm. means that a majority of the problems are coming from that. That doesn't mean farmers are doing a bad job. Mm-hmm. It just means that we have a lot of land use in agriculture.
So when you talk about the river being healthy, say what you mean, give a layman's understanding of what that means. Like, can I go ahead and dip my cup into it and have a nice long drink, or can I swim in it? Is there a certain amount of wildlife? I mean, what goes into a river being healthy in today's era?
So let's right off the bat say that no, I never want anyone to go dip their cup into any river or stream anywhere in the world and drink it. Most pollutants are totally colorless and totally odorless. That's why we have these great drinking water systems.
Right.
Go to the tap. But in Ohio, we judge the health of our rivers and streams based on whether or not the bugs and fish are living there. Mm-hmm. Because those bugs and fish are the canary in the coal mine. Mm-hmm. They cannot tolerate polluted waters. Mm-hmm. And if we find the ones that can't tolerate the pollution, we know the river is very clean. And because bugs and fish live, not just a few days, but several weeks, years, mm-hmm. if we find them, we know that the water has been clean for a while. Mm-hmm. So we're looking for species that can't stand the pollution. They mm-hmm. like lots of oxygen. They don't like cloudy water, that kind of thing. And mm-hmm. so while the Conservancy District does not do those biological studies, our state agency, the Ohio EPA, does, mm-hmm. we rely heavily on those reports that they put out to see whether our rivers are healthy. We do a lot of monitoring on the river. It's mostly chemistry. We are looking for those nitrates that are coming down. We're looking at oxygen levels and temperature and other things mm-hmm. That really help fill in the gap of some of the information we don't know. And so together with that biological information, what fish and bugs are there, along with the nitrogen levels, we can really get a good picture of what the health of the river is.
So does the does the Conservancy District's work then also involve other, there's the three big rivers, obviously, that come in, but there's also like Bear Creek and some other smaller tributaries that are not part of the dam system, but are they also part of your work?
So we have several different programs in the Miami Conservancy District. And depending on what program we're talking about, then yes, many of those smaller creeks and streams are involved in those programs. And it just kind of depends on how those programs evolved over time and what the mission of those programs are. For example, we have an aquifer preservation program, or we call it the groundwater program, and it covers parts of 9 counties. And stretches into many of those little streams. And we're really looking at whether or not the aquifer is staying plentiful and staying healthy. And the rivers and streams are all connected to that groundwater. So it's just one big picture of what the water's like.
That's cool. So Kurt, as chief engineer, what falls under your bailiwick?
Primarily, it's managing, taking care of the built environment, what we have, and also planning for what we need to have or what we can expand. Our system, as we said, was built, completed in 1922, so it's now 90-plus years
old. It's getting up there, yeah.
Just like the rest of us, when we get to be 90 years old, we need some help. The dams and levees are overall in very good condition, but that's because we have maintained them since day one. You can't just build something and leave it there. You have to take care of it. So your basic stuff like cutting grass and make sure you have good grass cover, to repairing groundhog holes, to fixing concrete.
I was going to ask, like, so for a structure that massive, I mean, what sort of things literally go into maintaining a giant concrete dam? I mean, does it do they spring leaks and get cracks? I mean, the way you would expect? I mean,
I'd say it's possible. Yeah. Our job is to make sure they don't.
Right, right.
So obviously we pay attention, we monitor it when it is storing water. We collect a lot of data, not only the embankment itself and the conduits that are passing the water, but also the foundation of the dams. Sarah had talked about the aquifer preservation and our work in the aquifer. One of the downfalls of building a dam over an aquifer is the foundation's going to leak. There's a place for the water to pass through. So that's something that has to be managed so it doesn't create a problem at the dams. So we've implemented projects at all of the dams to manage that water. It still can flow under the dam, but it's not flowing under pressures that can damage the dam. So we are doing a lot to rehabilitate. We're getting more involved in concrete rehabilitation as the structures get older. The concrete's starting to show its age. Structurally, we're still in pretty good condition, but we got to make sure that we repair and rehabilitate now so 20, 30 years from now, it doesn't become a structural problem.
I was going to say, what is the expected lifespan of one of the individual dams?
That's a really good question.
I don't have any idea. Forever.
When they designed it, it was intended to last forever.
Right.
It was a large pile of earth, which can sit there as long as earth is here, I guess.
Sure.
But it does have concrete structures, and we know a lot more now about things like the seepage through the foundation, the erosion, and the hydraulics of the structures. So because we know more, we have to take care of more. As you identify something that's going on, because we have better analytical tools, we got computers, we've got monitoring and a lot of data, we have to address that. If we see something that's a problem now or we think could be a problem in the future, we want to make sure we can address it now in a cost-effective manner so it's not a problem in the future.
So looking back on, as someone who, like, you know, appreciates what they did when they did it, there's not that much of our infrastructure that's as old as these dams, some bridges maybe, but I mean, for the most part, not much of the stuff we drive on is this old. Looking back on it, is it the system that we would create today to do the same thing, or is it, I mean, it's worked, obviously, but did they do a good job, pretty much, thinking through the problem?
Overall, I think they did an excellent job. What they came up with the tools and technology of 100 years ago is pretty incredible. Obviously, some things might be done differently as far as like building the dam on top of the aquifer. We may put different controls in the foundations. The technology of concrete today is far beyond what it was 100 years ago. We would probably still have the concrete structures, but it would be better materials and designed for withstanding longer life. So the basic concept, I think, is as brilliant today as it was 100 years ago. It's just that time goes on, so we have to make sure we address what we can.
That's pretty cool. Let's tell people what they're listening to. If you're just tuning in and joining us, good morning. We're happy to have you. This is Miami Valley Voices on this Cox radio station. I'm your host from the Dayton Daily News, Ron Rollins, and we are in the studio with two leaders at the Miami Conservancy District, Kurt Reinhardt, the chief engineer, and Sarah Hippensteel-Hall, who is the manager of Watershed Partnerships. And the Conservancy District is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year, 100 years of keeping our community safe. Sarah, you'd mentioned before we flipped on the mics that you one of the things you did want to talk about was that whole contribution to the community that the Conservancy gives and keeps giving. Talk about that a little bit. What did you mean by that?
So it's not just that we protect the community from flooding, because obviously that is our primary and most critical mission, but that because we're protecting this region from flooding, then the communities are free or able or to develop their riverfronts, to enjoy their riverfronts, mm-hmm. and not just for recreation. Obviously, there are many places to go fishing, which is the most popular sport in the world, or to put your boat in, or to spend some time paddling down the river, but also to do development along the river and be assured that your house or your business or your manufacturing facility, whatever it is going to be safe from flooding. And so we are seeing communities develop these riverfronts more and more like maybe we never have in our history. I can't go back 90 years, but at least in our recent history, we're seeing some really great investments in our river cities, whether it be Piqua or Troy, Dayton, obviously, or even Hamilton, really bringing in new and exciting things that will generate excitement for our downtowns and bring and keep young people in our communities. Sure. And
I've heard it said over the years, especially I've lived here a long time, and heard it said shortly after I moved here in the 80s, when there was a lot less of this going on. And my question to some of the folks that were old timers who was like, why isn't there more stuff along the river? And I remember a couple people said like that the catchphrase was that after the flood, Dayton quote unquote turned its back on the river and put up a big wall and said, what river, you stay over there and we're going to stay here where it's dry. And that took a long time for that to change to what you're talking about.
Yes,
what has led to the mindset change?
I agree. I think people, especially that had a memory of the flood and the aftermath, were scared of the river. And although the Conservancy District built this amazing system that began to keep them dry for decades and decades, we even put our office right in the middle of downtown, right next to the river, right, to show people that we felt strongly the system was going to be successful. I'm sure people still had this amazing fear of mm-hmm. what had happened. And I just think it took generations to turn that around. And also the rivers weren't as healthy as they are now. So mm-hmm. we didn't always have the Clean Water Act to protect us from spewing pollutants out of pipes. We mm-hmm. didn't have community wastewater treatment plants that were cleaning up human sewage from going in the river. That has only been in the last 50 years that has mm-hmm. really changed.
Yeah,
so now we have this
really, yeah.
healthy river. We have it's safe from flooding. We have this beautiful ribbon of green that goes through these communities, and I think it's just now is the time for the river to be the shining feature of our river cities.
You mentioned the river of green. The Metro Parks, I assume, is one of your main partners. Talk a little bit about what you alluded to with the river run down. I assume you're talking about the river run coming in downtown Dayton, the recreational canoeing and kayaking thing. A good thing? Do you think it'll work? You looking forward to it?
I am looking forward to it. I'm not that kind of paddler. Mm. I'm a more of a, nice, quiet water paddler.
Same here. Right.
But I see that lots of people are having fun with it. We built that dam in the 80s, 70s.
Oh, those low dams,
to create a pool of water for recreation when that kind of was the feature of recreation or the focus of water recreation. Mm. Now that has shifted into more of an active lifestyle, and I see the success that's happening with the other whitewater features in the mm. area, and I think I know that people will come down to watch what's going on.
Yeah, it should be kind of cool. Now, there are still some low dams, though, right? The one in West Carrollton It does create a pool where they actually have motorboating and stuff like that that really has never taken off downtown. That stays, right? Like when people read in the paper that the low dams are coming out, it's just the two down. It's the A or two.
Well, right now only the Monument Dam is scheduled to be altered. We also own a small and very elderly decommissioned power plant dam downstream of the Dayton area. Downstream of Stewart Street Bridge. Okay, it's called the Tate Station Dam. Right. It was originally built for the power plant that's no longer there.
I remember Tate Station.
It's quite aged. It's in disrepair, and we will be removing that in sometime in the future, but it was never for recreation.
Okay.
Island Metro Park has a low dam that is very valued for rowers. Hamilton, we built a dam there that creates a pool that's very valued for by the rowers.
Right.
West Carrollton is obviously a popular power boating and dam. Those dams are valued.
They serve their purpose, right. So what are some of the other ways that the rivers have changed over time? I mean, the Loa dams were an addition when? In the 60s, 70s, 80s?
Many of them. Well, different ones have different ages. As Sarah said, the Tate Station Dam was actually built in the 30s for a power plant.
Okay.
The power plant is long gone and the dam is still there. But the value of the dam and the condition of the dam, it's really not very salvageable anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But in the 1970s is when the community started looking back at the river and saying, okay, we have this ribbon of green that's very underutilized that many communities don't have.
Right.
You may have one patch of green area next to the river in downtown, but we have it completely through the rivers. And that's because the way the system was built, the levees were built with a large river channel to pass very large floods because we have a high degree of flood protection.
Right.
But we have this underutilized river corridor. So in the 1970s, communities started looking at how can we embrace this? And that also corresponds to when the water quality was improving. So it wasn't as stinky as it used to be. It used to be not a pleasant place to go, and it started becoming that way. So they started looking at, let's build bikeways along the river, bring people to the river.
Mm-hmm.
That generated what is their riverfront development. And so low dams in the 70s and 80s were popular. And the one here in Dayton and in West Carrollton and Hamilton, we built those three because the community said we want a low dam to create a pool, to bring people to the river. Some have rowing, some have motorboating, fishing, whatever. So they are amenities to the community.
Is taking one out a pretty big deal? I mean, you can't see it because it's under the water, but what do they look like? How large of a structure under the water are we talking about?
They're different sizes. The Hamilton and West Carrollton are both about 10 feet high.
Oh, my goodness.
Here at Dayton, the one that is being taken out for River Run is about 5 feet high, but it's 400 feet long.
So it's still a lot of concrete to come out. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah,
now, the other thing I'd like to add is that it's not just about what's going on next to the river, but the collection of assets that we have in the sort of corridor area.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Dayton Art Institute is in that corridor. We have all these amazing historical and cultural assets, and it doesn't just stretch in our city areas. We just successfully had the Army Corps of Engineers do a study on 99 miles of the river from Pickwa all the way, or Sydney all the way down to Hamilton, and said that we have some of the most amazing collection of assets of any river section anywhere in the country, and that if we market them in a way that will really bring people in as a destination.
Now, is that something that marketing aspect, is that something that your agency really has much of a hand in, or do you partner with other organizations on that?
So we have lots of partners. Obviously, everything we do is in partnership with lots of local communities, but we are facilitating that conversation in that 99-mile stretch, and we're hopeful that at the beginning of next year, we'll really begin to launch some effort to really talk to about how great this place is.
Yeah. And before we flipped on the mics, Sarah, you were talking again about larger water issues than just the river itself, but drinking water concerns. And you made the mention that folks really kind of don't think too much about water until it's something that they have a problem with. We have a few minutes left. Just talk a little bit about what you wish people would think about when they think about water.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think we all take it for granted. We turn the tap on, it's there, it's clean.
Thank goodness.
You know, we go to, that's right.
And we like that.
Our communities are doing a good job providing that service to us and at a good value. But unfortunately, we see the disasters that are happening in other parts of the country. California is under severe drought. Last summer, Toledo lost their drinking water for 3 days. Mm-hmm. For 400,000 people, and we don't.
And there was
ever,
the West Virginian thing too. That
West Virginia
kind of people forgot about because in Ohio, because the Toledo thing happened right after that.
We could name almost every day. I could pick up the newspaper and find some water-related sort of disaster story going on mm-hmm. somewhere, whether it be in the U.S. or around the country.
Sure.
And the idea is that we shouldn't wait for the disaster to prepare or protect these mm-hmm. resources. And that's the Conservancy District has thought about this. You know, trying to make sure our groundwater stays plentiful and healthy for us for a long time in the future. But it's also about making sure we protect our rivers. So that our river stays healthy and work with communities so that they can do land use policies that ensure that this resource is there for us to come. And
do you think it's something that is getting better or worse in terms of people's attitude and thinking about it? Have the recent headlines changed the conversation a little bit?
Well, I think, you know, if we look back 20, 30, 40 years ago, then yes, we're definitely in a better place than we were then. I still think there's lots of stuff that communities could be doing to do a better job of that. And mm-hmm. we really need to be more water-centric. So we cannot live without it. And mm-hmm. once we lose our drinking water source, and for us it's the aquifer, we don't have another one. We don't have the ability to just snap our fingers and dig another aquifer. So if we don't do absolutely everything we can to protect it now, who knows? We don't know what's going to happen in mm-hmm. the future.
Mm-hmm. And, well, that's a good point. Any parting thoughts from either of you? I mean, what's something about the Conservancy District that you think people don't know or think about that you wish they would?
I think sometimes we get taken for granted. I jokingly sometimes hear people say, well, Conservancy District, it never floods around here anymore.
What do you need to be there for?
Right, exactly.
You know, I think for many decades we did our job so silently and so well that people forgot that there was a real purpose. And I think we're really trying to change that conversation so that, you know, people know that, mm-hmm. yes, when it rains, the system is doing its job and that right. we're out there also thinking about groundwater and water enjoyment and economic development, all of those things that make communities successful that you know, we're really trying to add to that conversation.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if you look at what we bring to the communities, that's something that where else in the world you have an extremely high level of flood protection. You have access to river channels that's open public land. You have incredible resource like our buried valley aquifer and people actually being proactive about let's protect it so we don't have this damage. So there's just a lot of things that come together. And then because we are a watershed-based organization, we work closely, as Sarah said, with people throughout the southwestern Ohio, whether it's from Piqua or Hamilton or
all through,
wherever. And so we're bringing people together, people like wastewater treatment operators and agricultural producers that don't normally have a reason to work together.
Right.
And so we're bringing people together to see the value of
all of it.
All of it and how we all work together and hopefully to the benefit of everybody.
That's cool. We're out of time. I told you it goes fast. Thanks for coming in and talking about water with
Thank
us.
You.
We've been here with Kurt Reinhart and Sarah Hippensteel Hall from the Miami Conservancy District marking its 100th anniversary. And you can learn more at mcdwater.org, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks for coming in. We'll get you in some other time and talk about water some more.
Thank you.
This has been Miami Valley Voices on this Cox Radio Station. I'm Ron Rollins. We will see you next Sunday.